Welcome to the 14th episode of the Nonstop Podcast with Pooja. With me, I have Narmada and the very lovely Narmada. Welcome, Narmada. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Pooja. Thank you for having me here. This is the first time I'm actually doing something like this, basically being in front of the camera. So just trying something out of my comfort zone. Thank you for inviting me.
But I wouldn't agree because you're quite the woman yourself. You have a lot under your butterfly wings. So we will get into that. But right. Just a very brief introduction. You are a marketing genius and you have a couple of brands under your wings and one very active brand, which we are going to talk a lot about today. So Narmada has a marketing brand and a company called Clinic.
Click.
You began this journey when? And tell us a little bit about that.
So Click was actually an accident. It happened on its own. It wasn't a conscious decision that I took. I was initially a freelancer, you know, doing social media on my own. So I have a background of hospitality. So I studied hospitality in Switzerland for 4 years. And the plan was to come back to Chennai, get a little experience here and there, and start a restaurant or cafe of my own. So while the experience was going on, COVID happened and I had to make money. So I can't open something during COVID. And that's when I decided, okay, so let's put my hospitality degree and my marketing degree to use. I started handling social media pages for different restaurants in and around Chennai. And what happened was, I think I got overbooked at one point. So I started hiring people to help me out. So we were a group of freelancers which I was heading and handling multiple pages. I think after a point, I think when I was 7 to 8 accounts down, I was just like, okay, you know what? Now I think this is what I'm going to be doing, because I was making decent money. I was like, okay, what else? It doesn't matter. And then I registered something out of the blue. My dad came up with the name. Click actually means a group of people with similar interests, you know, and they usually do not welcome others onto their table. So it is a little strong.
It's like a queen bee kind of concept. Yeah.
So he named my company and that's how Click started. It wasn't a conscious decision. It just happened. And it's been, I think I registered May 4th, 2020. So it's going to be 5 years now. And
well, it's incredible to hear. Yeah. But we have to go a little backwards first to understand how you got here. So you said you have a degree in hospitality.
Yes.
So how did that, it's not that everybody just comes up and say, okay, I want a degree in hospitality.
Yeah.
Because that's not something that's even presented to you when you're studying or in your academics, or it's not that something that typically goes along well with math or science.
Yeah.
So how did you come along with that?
I'm so glad you asked me this.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people have this doubt and they always say, you studied hospitality and what are you doing? Like, why are you running a marketing agency, right? So a little background on that. I used to play a lot of sports back in school. I used to play hockey and I used to swim a lot. And when it came to, you know, getting into college, there was a lot of politics involved in that stuff. And like, I didn't find my base. So the second most thing I loved after sports was food, because my parents are in the food industry and I always enjoyed watching them do what they do. So my dad was like, you know what, you study hospitality. Right then, I didn't ever think that I would want a restaurant or a cafe, because like, I was just like, okay, study hospitality and do what, right? But I think Appa was like, you know what, hospitality is the industry which teaches you how to deal with different kinds of people. It's about being hospitable, it's about being warm, it's about being welcoming. And no matter what business you do in the future, your hospitality degree, what you learn there, is always going to help you. So just take the call, just do it. So I did hospitality. I was in Switzerland for 4 years. The good part about the course was, it's like 3 years you're learning about, you know, how different hospitality sectors work. And the fourth year you get to choose what your specialization is. So I picked up entrepreneurship just to keep my horizon wide. And so that's where the hospitality degree came in. I came back to Chennai. I worked in this FMCG called Kevin Care for a while. And I also did my PGD in marketing in Liba at the same time. So I put my hospitality and my marketing degree together and I started doing marketing for restaurants in and around Chennai, but now we also do it for other people. So that's the story.
Oh, there's a crazy trajectory there, you know, like it doesn't look straightforward.
Right.
But I'm sure there's a lot that spins around it.
Right.
The next question that just pops out to me very organically is to ask you, why Switzerland? Like, why did you think that? I mean, I'm sure you had some reasoning behind wanting to go there and learn that. And what did you think is the biggest difference, not just academically, but also in terms of entrepreneurial skills that you could have probably catered for European market versus an Indian market with just a billion people, a more complex environment versus, you know, a more straightforward structure that you would have been exposed or learned.
So we are talking about going back 13 years. That's when, you know, I was joining college, right? My dad's been in the hospitality industry ever since, I don't know, it's been forever, right? So he knows like what works, what doesn't work. I was in a boarding school, so I didn't have the opportunity to go and visit the colleges that I'm supposed to check out. So he went and visited a couple of colleges in India, and he was just like, you know what, okay, this market is going to boom, but the standards are set quite low, and this is just for hotel management, meaning Indian education is on par, in fact, over the rest in all other sectors. But I think in terms of hospitality management or hotel management, I think he felt that he did his research and he felt that the Indian hotel industry wasn't at par back then. So when he, you know, did his research, found out about a few stuff, he found out that Switzerland has some of the best hospitality colleges. And the good thing about Switzerland, see, I don't have a comparison over here, because I have not been to an hotel management college in India. But what I loved about my college was 6 months you're in the kitchen, 6 months, you know, you're doing front office, 6 months you're doing back office, 6 months you're just cleaning rooms, doing housekeeping. So you're exposed to everything. And in between that 4 years, you have to fit in one extra year to do practical service. So I also worked with Hyatt Regency over here in Chennai for 6 months. And then I did a business internship. So I think a lot of practicality as well as theory went into studying there. And also, I think the most important thing is networking. Mm-hmm. I think when you study there, you're meeting people from... So I think in my batch, there were around, almost 20-something Indians. So now we have friends across the nation, right? And it's the great... Forget across the nation, Switzerland, because you have friends across the world. Like, if I go to Korea, I know someone. If I go to Switzerland, I know someone. If I go to Japan, I know someone. So there are people all around Pakistan. Oh my God, Pakistan's hotels are beautiful, like from what my friends have shown me. So it's also about networking. So my dad's like, you know, you might as well go for the best. Network, get to know, learn about other cultures, because culture also plays a big role, which has honestly helped me a lot in this marketing journey, which I was not foreseeing at all. Because I think when you market, so I have brands in Dubai that we work with. I have brands in Singapore that we work with. But you need to be culturally sensitive when you're marketing a certain brand, right? So I think in a way, unknowingly, it has helped my journey, not only professionally, but personally also. Like, you get to relate to so many people from across the globe. So,
I think it's super interesting, and it's very, I'm kind of like wrapping my head around, you know, which is the next pair of interesting conversations that I could pick with you.
Right.
But also, one of the things that did come to me is that you did have this, you know, kind of strong foundation that could help you take a big pivot, such as marketing.
Yeah.
But marketing in itself is a huge world today. There is, I mean, from 5 years ago or 10 years ago, a lot of things we have. Political leaders who are influencers in today's time. So it's become a really complex and a very concrete environment. It's no more, you know, for just a kind of an entertainment. Yeah. It's also used for several important and purposes. So in this world of marketing, I'm sure you do a lot of digital marketing and social media marketing.
Yeah.
But when you started off and to now, what do you see is the whole timeline of things and how has things really changed for marketing?
I feel like this is an answer that's never going to change in terms of digital marketing. As we talk, there are trends being formed. There are trends being changed. Something that was happening yesterday is not happening anymore today. So things have changed in a very vast way, okay? And when you're talking about businesses, especially on social media, which is what we cater to, say years back, if a restaurant opened, how do you get the word around? Either people cross you, they see that the restaurant's opened. We used to get flyers in newspapers. You know, you open a newspaper, some 10 flyers pop down. So, you know, okay, this place has opened. Or there's a radio, ad, TV ad. Those were the different kinds of channels that were available years back, right? But I think fast forwarding to today, you don't have to spend on any of that. You have a free platform, absolutely free. You create an account, you create content, tap, and it's out there. You're reaching a huge set of audience just by a tap, right? So I think it's a very powerful, social media is becoming a very powerful stage for businesses to be on. But at the same time, it's very important to realize that it also comes with a lot of responsibility. That one tick can also go wrong. You know, you need to be very careful. It needs to be done right. It can't just be, you can't just show up and say, I showed up. You need to show up the right way. So there's a lot of strategy that goes behind. There's a lot of structure that goes behind. So I think every business, you name the business and the business is there on social media. For example, I think even 2 days back, our team, we were discussing different interesting accounts and we saw this really, really small shop in Pakistan. The kind of marketing they're doing, they're using their phone and the kind of videos they were putting, and they have millions of, viewers for their reels. And it's just a small store, a boy is running and he's using his phone to edit, to post everything. So that's the kind of power it holds, right? So every business is on social media right now. Every business needs to use it the right way. If used the right way, it's the most powerful tool. But you need to be very careful. You need to be very structured. There needs to be, effort that goes into it. It can't be like, okay, let's just take this and put this. It doesn't work that way. Every post, every kind of piece of content that you're putting out needs to be a part of the bigger picture. It needs to scream your name. Like, for example, some of my favorites are Zomato, Madover Marketing. You know, these are posts, you see it anywhere, even without the logo, you know it's their post. Because there's a whole lot of branding that comes into the stage of marketing as well. Another brand that I love on social media is Red Bull. So they don't market their product. You see any of the Red Bull videos, very few will have their product over it. They just sell adrenaline, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like bikers, cars, different kind of adventure sports. To basically say you have wings. So it's a very beautiful way of marketing. You just have to use it right. You have to find the thing. And that's where a lot of people bring in agencies to do that work for them. Because doing it in-house, I definitely say doing it in-house is great because no one knows your brand as much as the people who are in it. But there's also, it's not just art. There's also a bit of science involved, strategy, timing. There's so much involved. So that's where an agency comes in and tries to help you and, put your message out there.
Yeah, I'm sure the whole point of the podcast is not to get all the trade secrets out, but right? I'm sure I'm trying my level best to also learn and for anyone listening to this to also truly understand, the work that goes behind this is very tailored, it's very principled, and it's not just getting a name or a company out there, but there is also a lot more that goes behind it because it certainly does. So in terms of branding that goes hand in hand with marketing because as you said yourself, now a lot of things that we associate ourselves with, the things that we've been catered to on television, for example, watching Wimbledon or watching a Pepsi or Coca-Cola ad used to be so different versus what we see on the socials now.
Right.
It's completely different.
Yeah.
And it holds a very different impact on yourself and just So what I would like to understand is the mechanism behind this, right? Of course, there is There is a whole idea of engaging agencies for it, and then that, you know, there's more tailored effort, there is more consistent effort.
Right.
Because consistency is also a huge thing that most people that think, oh, I can handle it myself, you know. I'm enough for this. And then they end up not being consistent, or they don't know which time is appropriate for what content. And then things go haywire. Yeah. So what's the whole idea of you guys jumping into the picture, and what's the branding perspective that you bring into this whole equation?
Yeah. So I'll tell you, you're spot on, because most businesses, the moment they want to cut costs, the first cost they usually cut is social media, because they think they can handle it in-house, right? And that's why we take the hit. But that's the sad reality. But when you look at it, so we come with a perspective where we are going through, that's our job. We are going through algorithms every day. We're going through, you know, how your account is reacting to each post every day. There's a quote that I really like, and I like to use it while using social media as well. You know, there's a quote that says, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it at all. It's the same thing for social media. If your brand doesn't have something nice to say or something nice, don't put it out. You don't have to put a post out just for the sake of putting it out, right? You have something important to say, you have something nice to say, you put it out. So that's where we come in, because I feel brands, when they are like, they understand themselves very well, but I think it's easy to get lost in that hustle and bustle of just wanting to post and be a part of that, you know, game. Oh, we are posting every day. It's not important. You post less, but if you're posting good content, that talks way more than, let's say, for example, someone has 1 million followers and their engagement, you know, you go to their likes and they have like 200 likes. There might be someone with just 1,000 followers but are getting 500 likes. That's what matters more. Is the community that you have actually your community? Okay, so we help build that community. We bring that community into place. There's so much that goes into it. It's not just about how your page looks. It's about the language that you use. Are you going to be a fun brand? Are you going to be a serious brand? It depends. You know what? So we bring that entire thing. You have an account manager from our end who's constantly focusing on just your social media game. So yeah, that's how it works. But I still think there are brands who have in-house teams. They hire social media, you know, managers to get in-house and they work on it. That also works. But if you're going to expect some random person in, you know, a marketing person to just take care of your social media, it's not going to work. You need someone who knows the knickknacks, who knows the latest trends, who knows what trending music is. There's so many people who don't even know how to find the trending music, and they're just like, okay, you know what, I'm handling a page. Then you'll have to tell them, you know, that small arrow down there you find like this, that's trending music. If it's a music symbol, it's not. So there's so much that goes into it. We are in the business, we're looking at it every day, and we'll be able to give the latest updates and say what works for your brand, what doesn't, because that's our sole job. And I think everyone has their own job, especially business owners. When they start out, they hesitate to invest in social media because they think they can do it themselves, but they don't realize there's so much on their plate already. I think, to be honest, I don't have time to look at Click's social media page, because I'm every day sitting with the accounts. I'm sitting like HR, like there's so much happening, right? So me, a social media agency, I don't have time to look at how other businesses are going to do that. So that's where an agency comes into play.
I think that's very beautifully put. Like, I'm a lawyer. So, you know, in legal world, I mean, for example, in India, advertising is not like very propagated.
Right.
We cannot do it legally.
Yeah.
Whereas the other countries, even the law firms, really do invest in these things.
Right.
And it's very, you might think, oh, it's such a serious business. It's so, you know, it's not everything that comes out legal is, you know, something that you are probably going to catch your eye, you want to read on it. Some of the things are just everyday, you know, commercial, corporate work. But however, even these things are being, you know, taken into the advertising angle, because in order for you to know yourself in today's world, you need to be out there. And by out there, I mean in social media things. So one of the favorite things that lawyers always say when you ask them a question is, it depends. That's what we always say. Yeah. And there's one word I saw you saying in the whole of our conversation that there's a lot of science involved. And that really made me think, I'm like, what's the science involved behind this? Then I did understand that you probably meant the technology and the whole algorithm work. And there's so much of, you know, facts that you need to map.
Numbers.
And all the mapping you do and all the understanding you do. And because at the end of the day, it's very mathematically oriented. Yes. There's a lot of creativity that goes behind
it. So it's art and science, right?
Art and science. It got so serious so quickly. Yeah. It's not the, you know, it's not a general, oh, Red Bull gives me wings. Behind the wings, there's so much structure that holds, you know, there's a whole cement and there's a whole concrete level that just holds all of this together.
Yes.
So it does make me think, as much as you focus as agency or account managers on the creative content, because I'm sure that is the PSP that you really need to knack it down. But what does go behind the algorithm level? Are you using any artificial intelligence tools? What do you give for your, you know, clients? Like, how do you satisfy them? Because sometimes what happens, I am also in the sphere of business. I also have a podcast. I've also tried the social media angle of things. So sometimes business owners do think, okay, you know what? Okay, the reels are doing well in Instagram. The LinkedIn posts are doing well for a specific audience. But there is no big engagement. There's no community that's been created. Yeah. There are no many followers, you know. So what is that you tell your clients? Or like, how do you convince them? Is this a long game? Or do you tell them, okay, this is your statistics, you know, these are your reaches, these are your numbers, these are your projected numbers, this will be your result, and this is what you're missing, you know, some kind of touching element or some kind of relatability element. How do you kind of pitch this whole thing out to them?
It's the most difficult thing to do, but because, you know, when someone's paying you, they automatically expect some kind of a result. Unfortunately, in social media, you really cannot promise specific numbers. This is leaving the ads apart, right? Like, at least when you're running ads, you can project, okay, you know, you run an ad for this amount, you might get this much out of it, sales out of it. You can project that. But in terms of social media without ads, organic, there's no projection. So whenever someone comes to us, at least, I always say, I won't promise you numbers, but I'll promise you, you have 100 people. These 100 people will buy from you at some point of time. We're building that community for you. That's what I promise. There are brands who come to us and they're like, we'll give you three months time. We want 10,000 followers. I safely do not take those brands because I can buy 10,000 followers and I can give it to the brand, but I don't know if those 10,000 followers are going to work for them. It's just going to look like a fancy number. I'll bring a parallel for you to understand how this works since you asked, right? So there's also aesthetic that comes into play. This is more like, let's take a dating app. What's the first thing that someone does? They see someone, they like the way they look. That's when they read their bio. Okay, looks interesting. Start a conversation with them. Goes well, hit it off. Doesn't go well, chop it down. That's how social media is. So you go through your feed. You see a post that's appealing to you, you open the post. So that's the first digital handshake that you're getting, right? So you open the post. So you need to be appealing. But there's so much beyond that. What message are you giving out, okay? So is that something, are your caption or, you know, they'll automatically go to your page. Is it something that people are relating to? At least everyone doesn't have to relate to your brand. Just the people you want to relate, just your audience needs to. Are they relating to it? If they're relating to it, they're going to follow you. Okay, but how long are you going to keep it relatable and how long are you going to keep them engaged and interested depends on the content that you keep posting out, right? So that's when it breaks down to, you know, a long-term relationship. Otherwise, it's going to be very short-term. It's going to be like, okay, they followed you for a reason, for a particular... That's why giveaways work for a particular period. You know, you'll get a lot of followers when a brand is doing giveaways. But once the giveaway is closed, I think only the winner is going to continue following you. Everyone else is going to unfollow you after that, right? So that's how it works. So it's definitely a long-term game. It's not a short-term game at all. It's a long-term game. And in this long-term game, you're expected to have a lot of changes and adaptations because the digital world is changing and you need to adapt to it. So I tell my client, you know, I'm very open, I'm very transparent in these things. I tell them, see, tomorrow if something new comes up, give us a day or two to figure it out. Don't say, oh, this came up today morning, why isn't it out this afternoon? Because we are new to the changes as well, right? We'll be on top of the game. But I think it's evolving at such a fast speed that that's something that we have to put in effort and keep figuring out. So like you said, it's a long-term game. There's so much that goes into it. There's the aesthetic part. There's being relatable part. There's being real. You need to be real. You can't be fake. Like, how long can you put up with, you know, a fake person? A brand is similar. If you're going to be selling fake stuff, you're soon going to be exposed. Or if your product is not great, you're soon going to be exposed about that as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's all very intense stuff. And I have to kind of drag you out from that box and put you in a more relaxed box, because that's what you are.
Yeah.
Knowing you personally as well. So I think there's a lot of fun that goes behind marketing.
Yes.
And it's also a very interesting field to be in for anyone young, for anyone like wanting to be in business, but also wanting to, because all of us have a lot of creative beans in today's world, because we see a lot more, we hear a lot more, we're into a lot more activities, hobbies, things. We're generally more inspired.
Yeah.
So what's the creative action that goes behind it? You have a team of freelancers, which is the Clicks.
Now I have a team of in-house people.
Okay, that's
great. So
we
are a team of 10 of us.
Okay.
And everyone's in-house. We do work with a few freelancers from the outside, photographers, videographers, and so on. But our core team is in-house.
Okay, that's great. So now you're the exclusive Clicks, right?
Yeah.
So in this angle, when you do get in people, this is like recruiting not just talent, but also recruiting something more, because the creative bones is not something that you can train people with. You cannot teach people with. They have to come with very specific skill sets that's even beyond what's you know, marketable, or you know, need to be thinking out of the box, or it's not something that you can instill in them.
Right.
So what goes behind the creative process, very simply put?
So it's very difficult to judge whether the person has the knack for it or not. So hiring becomes very difficult for me. But also considering, like, see, now I have around 6 to 7 people on the creative end, right? Designers are easy because you see their portfolio and you hire them. But when it comes to social media marketers, say my team has around 5 of them. It's about how... See, you can't completely put the blame on them also when something goes wrong. So creativity is very subjective. A certain someone is quirky, you give them the quirky brands. A certain someone is serious, you give them the... It's a personality that comes out. Yeah? So, for example, like LinkedIn. I think we had a conversation before this about LinkedIn. I'm someone who's not a very video or picture person, so I love writing. So I thought LinkedIn is my platform, and I started writing on LinkedIn, right? And a lot of people, like when I meet someone who follows me on LinkedIn, they think they know me personally, because they're like, oh my god, that story of yours, they relate to me, they feel like we're friends already. And I think that's the perspective that every social media manager needs to give out. There's a lot of creative process that goes out. The difficulty comes in because now every brand comes up with, they are my benchmark, they are my inspiration. So it's easy to copy now. You know, it's more like copy paste. Just change the brand colors, change the voice, change the tone, copy paste. That's how it's been going. But I think originality is missing in a lot of brands. Social media marketers also need to start being original. AI has made life super easy for anyone in the creative field, but it needs to be used right. I can read content and I can tell you if it was AI or if someone actually wrote it. Because I use ChatGPT a lot. Okay, I'm not saying I don't. I use it a lot. But I think it's very important to add that human touch into it. And honestly, you never know until you hire them and they work with you for a few know, months. So it's a tricky position to be in, but I've been lucky. I have a good team. They've all been doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I got lucky that way. Yeah.
And what about the whole creative art process? I mean, I'm sure I am not really sure of the portfolio of brands you work with, yeah. but I'm sure they are from, you know, different spokes and yeah. specs of life and yeah. things and living beings. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure a lot of colors and,
yeah.
you know, art and just yeah. like music and all of this goes behind this, right?
Yeah.
How is the curation process for you? Like, how do you, I mean, like you said, you do use artificial intelligence
yes.
simply because it's yeah. readily available.
Yeah.
For different businesses, it's the yeah. tools are different, the software yeah. is different. I'm sure you're making use of something.
Yeah.
Are there some brands or software that you do use and you do are greatly thankful for, and then you do yeah. your own specific authenticity kind of touch to it? Or how does
See,
it
I
work?
Think the team works on so many different softwares, but I'm a purely ChatGPT person, like, right from pitching to, you know, making my decks to my presentations, ChatGPT helps me with everything. I'm being honest out here. So the creative process is where I think, you know, taking in what you gain from ChatGPT and combining it with the realness of the brand. There is some kind of, like I mentioned before, the human element to a brand, which only we can, you know, add in. There's no one else, no kind of AI can replace that emotion that goes in with a brand. Like, I can ask ChatGPT to talk about Click, but the way they're going to talk about Click and the way I'm going to talk about Click is going to be very different, right? So the creative process is, as an agency, I think we need to be like an extended partner to the brand. You can't just be an agency. You have to be like an extension of the brand. You need to be someone who believes in the products of your brands to be able to market it well. I really don't know how to express the creative process because...
Let me simplify a very yeah. trivia question.
Yeah.
So when you have to pick a scheme of colors, right?
Right.
And a yeah. scheme of things.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Is it like a tail painting kind of thing that you go into a painting shop
I think you're talking more about visual branding.
Yes. Yeah.
So the visual branding is more like, so, you know, we get a brand. They give us the name, they tell us the vision they have, and we think, okay, these are the colors that suit a brand. And obviously the designers have their own set of rules. They're like, okay, I think the standard rules goes that yellow, reds, oranges are used for food brands. Okay, you'll hardly see a food brand having a blue, you know, kind of color on their palette. But nowadays brands are adapting to it. Right, so there are standard rules, but you can shy away from them and, like, you know, adapt your own culture. There are standard rules for design, there are standard rules for social media and all of that. So when we're talking about visual branding, I think we give a brand the complete set of color palettes, fonts, everything that they have to use. So from the start to the end, they use only that. I'll give you a simple example. We work with multiple brands, okay, and the most difficult brand that we work with is a diagnostic brand because it's the medical field. You need to be very careful about the tone of language. You can't be funny over there, okay? But people like funny content. So how do you put that out? And very simple. They like it neat. They like it plain. But it also needs to be catchy. You can't just put plain stuff out there and market yourself. So I think that's a very tricky position. So I think each brand, when you come to us for branding, apart from social media, we also do branding. So when you come to us for branding, we create an entire deck. And even if you're not going to continue doing social media with us, if some random person from some other country is going to handle your social media account, all they have to see is this deck. You'll have 10 set of words that describe your brand. You'll have fonts that are specifically used for your brand. Don't move away from those fonts kind of thing. So that the brand recall is happening constantly. And along with that, like, you know, there's some cohesiveness for your brand. So I would like, yeah, it's all in the designer's perspective. And design itself is very subjective. Like, you know, whenever we give a set of logos to our client, we'll be like, okay, this is option one, this is option two. You'll not believe it. Most of our clients pick the one we least like. Okay, out of the four options, because it's subjective, right? So design is very subjective, but basic design rules, there are some basic design rules that people follow that makes it look appealing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that there's science in that as well. Like, see, it's art, but there's science. These are the yeah. rules you cannot yeah. afford to. For example, cursive. Cursive, you're supposed to attach all the letters. You know, the letters are supposed to be interlinked. If you do spread them out, it's not cursive anymore. It's a form of art, but there's some kind of a strategy involved in it, right?
Yeah, everything seems so loose, but it's still so tied together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure if anyone is listening to such an insightful conversation with you, I'm sure they are kind of like convinced, because your pitch on the whole conversation seems very convincing, even to me, that there is so much that does go behind, you know, every small detail of branding or marketing, of color or like cursive writing. So it is very interesting. And towards our final bits of the conversation, and I also want to know, you know, is there something that really did like inspire you before you started this whole journey? And then you kind of like, you know, like you said, that you hold to the principle of things very tight. You're like, everything is so loose and imaginative and easy and flowy. But there is so much that's basics or principles that hold everything together. So what was that for you? What was that one thing that keeps flashing your mind? You know, this is very... this is one of my inspirations. Yeah. It's one of my things that I have to go back to. And it's like a thumb rule that I keep following.
Yeah. See, I think for me, I'm a very easygoing person. I like things loose, okay? But there's a lot of structure in my life. Because I think I like to follow a routine. Everything has to be in its place. But I enjoy the little things in life. I take inspiration from literally anything. I think even when you texted me, the first thing I remembered was, oh my God, it's been so long since I did CrossFit. Because I think that's where we met, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember, because I remember you were so good at CrossFit. So, I take inspiration from everything around. There's not one particular thing that I can say. But I think that what had me thinking that I need to do something, like I want to be on my own, was my mother. She got married when she was in 11th grade, right? And my parents come from a village. My dad moved to the city. He started something of his own. He made something big. My mom got married in her 11th grade. She immediately had my sister. And then 4.5 years later, she had me. And she just brought us up. Fast forward to today, like say 30, 35 years later, my mom's running 2-3 businesses of her own. Right? And this is solely because my dad was like, you're so smart, do something with it. Like, you know, you don't have to just sit idly. Because, see, while we were at home, she was a homemaker. And obviously, she was the gel that kept the family together. But now that all of us are doing our own thing and, you know, we're all out, like, we're all living in different places, he really thought she needs to do something on her own. So that really inspired me. My mom, who came from, you know, from a village, was scared to even speak in English to people. She's running her own business of three other businesses. And over here, I went, I traveled the world. I got all the kind of exposure I can. And I'm like, okay, I want to do something. And I think it started very simple. It started with the thing that I want to make my parents happy. I think that was, I'm a very family knit person. It started with, I want to make my parents happy. I want to be able to give. Okay, it's not give back, because I don't think we can ever give back. But I think I just wanted to give. So I was like, okay, let me work hard. Everything just fell into place. And it still is. Like, it still is falling into place. I wouldn't say I'm fully settled. I'm like, you know, I'm still figuring out stuff, but I'm enjoying the journey. So I'm picking up inspiration here and there.
Yeah, you just comprised the whole novel out of my question. It started off in a very really, you know, emotionally intelligent plus very cozy note.
Yeah.
And I'm sure everybody draws inspiration from parents, especially we live in a wonderful society, and we are the pioneers of communityism, right?
Yes.
In India. We're all constantly seeking for relatability, community. Yes. Tightness and, like, you know, belonging.
Yeah.
Most often when we travel to the West, we constantly see the beauty of, you know, individualism or being by yourselves, like enjoying things by yourself. Right. But it's only in India things are so reverse, and people constantly want to belong somewhere.
Yeah.
And the beauty of belonging always does make me feel as well, you know, sometimes that it's not about giving back, but it's about giving.
Yeah.
So, I think you put it very beautifully. And I can see that you are a LinkedIn influencer, because all that you said was very beautifully and poetically and said right. So we've come to the last bits of the podcast, and I always ask all the guests what's your favorite book and what's that movie that changed your life or inspired you. It need not be anything intense. We've had guests say all kinds of answers, but this is by far my most favorite part of the whole conversation. Right. And I do know people wait until the end of this part of the whole...
about this?
About the favorite book and the favorite movies. Yeah. Because some of the guests who've been on the couch with me, the books that they have recommended have happened to be some of the best moving books that changed me as a person.
Oh, nice.
So I'm very eagerly waiting for what's yours.
So talking about books, I've loved books ever since, you know, I was little. And one book that I really loved was The Palace of Illusions. So it's basically the Mahabharata from a different perspective, from a fresh perspective, from a woman's perspective. The thing is, so when I was growing up, I've heard the Mahabharata twice or thrice, right? Like the entire story. It took almost like a year for my like my schooling to put it across to us. So I've always heard it from a certain perspective. But when I read this book, it's by Chitra Banerjee. This book is by Chitra Banerjee. It was from a woman's perspective. It's fiction. It's not the actual, you know, some facts may vary from the actual Mahabharata. But it's fiction. But it was so beautiful to see it from a woman's perspective. And because I feel like one story was completely seen from one angle that we completely ignore the other angle. When you see it from that angle, everyone else becomes, you know, irrelevant. And this person is like so powerful in your eyes. I think that was a book that I really loved because I would love to implement that in life as well. Like, you know, you hear a story, you hear only one side of the story. Why not the other side? There might be justice to the other side as well. You don't necessarily have to hear it, but even if you hear one side, just don't be judgmental about it or don't, you know, hate the other person for it. Okay, it happened. It's their story. That's it. So I think that was a book that really helped me. Another book that I recently read was Sudha Murthy ma'am's book called Thousand Stitches. So it's a book of short stories that she's experienced in her life. I would say any, especially Indian woman who like to venture into entrepreneurship or do something solid with their life or give back to society has to read that book. It was so beautiful and I'm so I read it actually last month. So I'm really motivated to, you know, do something for society now. So I'm still thinking about what that's going to be. But yeah, these are two books that I love.
Okay, that's so well put and so beautifully described. Even a book, you know, you kind of bring a lot of live elements to it. And I do love the way that you do explain everything. Right. And even for catching my attention, you know, you're kind of like in igniting so much life into every word and every sentence you say. And without any iota of doubt, I'm pretty sure you're in the right spoke of business. And you are a really wonderful girl. And I'm deeply thankful that you came on the podcast.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, and thank you for coming. Thank you.
Thank you, Pooja.